Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Corulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
This is your host with the most. We're going to jump right in. I'm very excited to interview this next guest. Say hello to actress, comedian extraordinaire, Kenna McEnroe. Say hello.
Hi.
Oh, our studio audience loves you already.
Thank you.
And I can silence them just like that. It's a gift.
That's usually how it is, the silent ones, the crickets. Yeah.
So where are you from?
I'm from Texas originally.
What city?
Levelland.
Oh, that's a small town.
Yeah, very small. I think it's like 13-something thousand now or something. It might have been like 11 or something when I was growing up.
You must miss Tex-Mex because I...
Oh my gosh,
yeah. I miss Tex-Mex.
It's too healthy here. Yeah, I was like, what's this black beans?
And it's not the same.
Come on. You got to have refried beans with a pound of cheese. Everything needs to
be
fried.
And they can't do queso in California.
No,
I don't
they
know
give
why.
You a skillet with like melted cheddar and your fork sticks
it's not
in it.
The
no.
Same.
No.
Yes.
Are you from Texas?
I'm from here, but I've done a lot of touring in Texas.
Okay, yeah.
And I just love Tex-Mex. And
oh my God, I love it.
That's the one thing you can't get in California. It's
well, that and a really, like, I have not found a chicken fried steak.
Okay.
Claim Jumpers tries.
No,
it's not the same. So chicken fried steak and gravy, you know.
Yep.
Everything was pretty much fried. I mean, we would fry lettuce if we
could.
But
why not? I mean, I love good food like that, and sometimes it's going to be fried.
Yeah.
You know what I miss the most about Tex-Mex is sopapilla.
Oh,
nobody
God.
Knows.
I can make you a sopapilla.
What?
They're so easy.
Don't. Now you're just playing games by heart.
You just get a flour tortilla, and you fry it.
You know what? But nobody makes it like, and then they put it with the honey butter.
Honey butter on it.
And some don't even do it like that. They do like little donuts. I'm like, no, this ain't it. This ain't it.
No, that's not it. No.
Wow. You know your stuff.
I do. Yeah, I can make some good Mexican food. I can make some enchiladas and tacos and queso.
Yeah, queso. That's like one of the, I feel like I have 70% blood and 30% queso running through my
body.
That's
me. Mainly queso and gravy, you know.
So when did you move to California?
I moved here June 21st, 2001.
You know the date.
I know the date. I know the time. I know it was playing, you know, Californication was playing. We timed
it. No way. Really?
Yes. When we came in.
That's crazy.
Yeah. It was wonderful. And I was so scared. You know, I was like in my 20s and stuff. I wasn't like totally young. I was 28, but you know,
still,
I had been like sheltered.
Going to the big city.
Yeah, the big city. I'd lived in Dallas 6 years before that, but Dallas was nothing compared to LA. And I really had this thought that, like, I never wanted to come to LA. I always wanted to go to New York because I sing. So I wanted to do Broadway and stuff.
Totally.
And I had auditioned at Juilliard. I got a call back, but I didn't get in. And so for 3 years, I like saved and I booked things out of Texas. And I thought, you know, maybe that's my sign to go to L.A. But I just thought of L.A. I was always the big girl. And I thought L.A. was just a bunch of skinny girls in thongs, like, you know, rollerblading, you know, down by the beach and everything. I was like, I'm going to hate it there.
And then you're like, oh, my God, everybody's normal just like everywhere else.
Yeah, exactly.
Except
there are a bunch of skinny girls.
There are.
But,
yes, that's true. But we have, you know, I'm a chubby man.
More to
you know,
love.
I like
there's
to represent.
To love. I like to tell people I'm carb loading for a role or something.
That's going to be my new excuse.
Sorry, it's for a role that I've been waiting to play for the last 20 years.
So you must have taken theater in high school,
of
junior
course,
high?
Everything, yeah.
When did you all start?
Well, I was always in choir because I was always a singer. So that was like
soprano or alto?
Soprano.
All right. Oh, diva.
Come on. And I did study classical in college and stuff.
I remember
but
you
in
talked about that.
About fifth or sixth grade, whenever, I think it was sixth, is when we were allowed to start taking like theater or drama whatever they called it back then. So that's when I started taking it. And ever since then, I was playing old ladies. I was like Weezer, you know, and I was like an 80-year-old woman in Capricious Pearls, you know. I was always like the old fat character actress.
But you know what? There's something about like learning the role. Yeah. And, you know, when you're that young playing older roles, it's yeah. super fun.
Yeah.
I played old people and it's just like, yes, yeah. now I'm old. I'm like, whoa, it's not as fun as when I was playing it as a young
exactly.
person.
Exactly. It's like, I've been 40 since I was, you know.
Do you remember the first play you did?
It was Capricious Pearls. I don't remember who it was even by.
Do you know the name of the role that you played?
I think it was like Mrs. Potts or something like that. I just remember that, yeah, I was an old person at a nursing
home. And how many people were in the troupe?
There was quite a few of us because, you know, they need to, like, have a role for everybody.
Right, right.
So, you know, and I think they, like, even wrote things in so that everybody could have the part. Let's just add a part. We're going to give you a couple of lines. You know, it's a little small school. So, but I don't remember. I mean, like, my memory is crap. I think it was from all the years of
partying.
Partying hard.
All the after parties?
Yeah, yeah.
Did you do any musicals in school?
Yeah, I did. Godspell.
Okay, that's a good one.
Yeah, that was a good one. And what else have I done? Oh, God, everything's leaving me. I mainly did a lot of, and this is when I got older living in Dallas, I did a lot of, like, musical reviews. There was a group called, that I was in called Big Daddy and the Butter Biscuits. And it
Great
was three
name.
Of us. Yeah, and we were, like, a swing band.
That's
but
awesome.
We pretty much did everything from back, like, the 70s to, like, from the 40s. Up into like the 70s.
So you did Gilbert and Sullivan, stuff like that as well?
So we did like Andrew Sisters, okay. McGuire Sisters, yep. But then we also did like as the Supremes. We did, you know, Tina
wow.
Turner. We just kind of did the whole gamut. Edith Piaf. I mean, it was all over the place, but it was such a fun show. And I also did
That's
another
awesome.
Review called Blast from the Past, which was also kind of like from the 40s up into like the 70s. And we had guys in that show. So there was like four girls in that show and two guys.
So you were in
and
it so, right away. Just, yeah. You were just in the mix.
Yeah. So, and we did like everything from like Mamas and the Papas, of course. I was Mama Cass.
Yeah.
You know, to like.
She's the best one. Hello.
Yeah. Hello.
That's compliments.
Hello.
And I heard she threw like the biggest raging parties all the time.
Well, probably. I'm
that
sure.
That was her thing.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was a lot of fun doing that stuff. And then I was in a band maybe 8 years ago out here, and now I'm just mainly when I sing and stuff, it's like with improv.
You mean
like
the,
boom, boom,
I mean the
boom,
perfect
boom.
Pop songs.
I'm beating things up over
So
here.
Did you take any improv classes here? Did you
oh, yeah.
go to college for theater and stuff like that?
Well, I was at Katie Studios. It's an actress conservatory of the Southwest in Dallas, and I went there, and I started with a guy named Randy Bennett, who was actually here at the Groundlings when he was growing up in the day, and he introduced me to Gary Austin.
Awesome.
At the Austin, it was the Big Stinkin' Austin Comedy Festival in Austin, and I was introduced to Gary Austin there when I still lived in Dallas, and so I got his information, and then like 3 years later I moved out here, and like I was out here the first week, and I thought, I'm just gonna try to call Gary and see if he remembers. He was like, yeah, I remember you, we're having a show tonight, come on down. So I went to the show, he asked me that night if I wanted to be his assistant. I was like, okay. So I just
wow.
started like
moving
being
fast.
His yeah bartering and doing his assistant work and stuff. And I was with Gary for, oh my gosh, he passed away a few years ago, sadly, and he was like a father and a mentor, but I don't know, 14, 15, 16 years. I mean, a long time that I
That's
was out
amazing
here.
To have that when you're out here, because
yeah.
the city can be overwhelming. It's
yeah.
a little bit like, it's like, I always tell people it's like a relaxed New York. It's like,
yeah.
it can act like New York and just like give you a big ass whooping, or it can be like a soft pat on the back and then kick down the stairs.
You can get lost out here though too.
Easy.
You can totally like get swept up in like the beach life
yep.
and this life and the parties and this and that, and then you don't stay on top of your career and stuff.
Yes.
But Gary was amazing. He was like the founder of the Groundlings.
Wow.
But he hadn't been there, gosh, I think he even left in the 70s or the 80s. I'm not sure when, but he founded it, and they actually built it. So he was like the start of all that. So he was
wow.
there with Paul Rubens, Pee Wee Herman,
yep, yep.
and like, you know, Mindy
Will
Sterling.
Will Ferrell went there, I think,
Will,
too.
Yeah, I think he was later on.
Yeah.
He wasn't there. Gary had already left at that point, but Gary was the start of all that. And so learning with him and being, you know, in his classes and stuff, I would say he's the most influential person, of course, in my life.
He must have really kind of been on you about timing and just like improv.
You know, Gary was so laid back with his teaching. He was completely different. And he had completely changed his way of teaching from the days of the Groundling. It was very much like yes and you lay it all out there in the first 90 seconds, the who, what, when, where, and all the typical stuff.
Right.
The freeze, the tag, all that stuff. And, you know, and then in late, when I was there for the evolving of it. He had already kind of evolved when by the time I got there. But in the last years, he was really like, we don't have a suggestion. We are the suggestion. We're just using, we're in some type of body language. We're making eye contact and
that's awesome.
Go.
Oh, you my know? God. Give me chills.
Yeah.
And
it was awesome. It was very that's organic. Awesome. Everything was organic. It didn't have to be funny. It wasn't about that in his class.
It was about truth,
about being organic. Some of the most sad, heart-wrenching things I've ever seen came out of his class. I would say Gary was famous for having scenes go on for like 20 minutes, though, and you'd be sitting there going, okay, am I going to get up tonight? This is going on for 20 minutes, you know. So, and he created an exercise that's my all-time favorite, and now I teach Gary's exercise called 48th Street. And it's basically you have these two things on stage. You can sit anything down, even like a bottle opener, the lid of a bottle on each side of the stage. And you're going and you're turning. And every time you turn, you're like changing your physicality just by whatever. And then whatever voice comes out of that physicality, like I'm shrunken over like this. So this is the voice is coming out of the physicality. And then you just start talking. The whole thing can be improvised or you can do memorized text.
Wow.
If you're working on part, it's a way that I still to this day, like, get ready for auditions, and if I've booked a role, I work that way, learning lines and stuff. It's the best thing.
That's amazing.
Then he'll say, stay on stage, and he has all these acting areas, like a couch and a lounge chair and a desk and this and that and a podium, and you're just going, and the whole time you're never neutral. You're always changing your physicality. I mean, it can just be as much as this to much as this, to whatever, to your face, and you're just, you know, nobody can see this, I forget that.
No, but you know what, you're entertaining, you're just entertaining.
But, and whatever comes out of that, whatever you're feeling in the moment, or, you know, and you can create, people have created one-man shows, one-woman shows, they've created plays, they've created screenplays out of it, or you can just, for yourself, work on an audition, work on the lines. And it's
the
most powerful exercise.
Your paradigm, basically.
It's about using your body and your voice in a way you've never ever used it before. And you could do the speech from Romeo and Juliet. He gave the example of a girl that did the Juliet in the balcony. And he said he saw it probably 40 different times. And she was a serpent one time. She was this way one time. She was an old lady one time. Doing this and every time changing. And he said every single one of them, she was amazing and brilliant.
That's incredible.
You get things stuck in your head when I know I do when I'm auditioning for a part, the way something should sound or whatever. Or this has a question mark or I need to yell on it.
Right.
And you take all that away. You know, it's like taking the punctuation out of, you know, his culture. Reading classes were awesome too, just going through a script and taking all the punctuation out.
Wow.
So that you're not like, you know,
you're not limited.
Yeah, you're not limited.
You're interpreting.
You're doing like, and you go in and you're not like trying to give them what you think they want. You're already got the character, you know, you're in it. So whether they like it or not, I mean, then they can just give adjustments but they still see something in you like, well, she was not right at all for the part, but we're going to remember her, you know, that kind of thing.
That's kind of like what you have to do. It's like if you can do, you know, the comedic character, it doesn't always mean you can do this full range. And when you do those shifts, you're building into that. You're building into these roles that have these other layers. It just adds to your resume.
Yeah. It's so funny because people say comedic actors and stuff, and I'm just an actor who happens to be funny a lot of times. But for the most part on my resume, most of my stuff is like,
drama.
Yeah, I was the murderer on CSI.
That's
you know,
awesome.
You know, there's different things like that, and I'm like, how come I don't get very many comedy stuff?
Well, but, you know, the thing that's really interesting about you, it's like, you know, you can do anything.
Oh well,
you can do anything, and you know
what?
It usually takes people that have that ability to shift. Not everybody does. Mm-hmm. Like some actors just don't. It's like you see them as one thing, and they don't have their one dimension. and one dimensional, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's kind of cool to see that you can do these giant shifts. Do you have a preference?
I don't, you know, I really get into like really dark stuff, you know, I love that, but then it's so much fun to just have fun and just play.
You like
but
extremes.
Even in the dark stuff, I'm still playing. Even if I go right. home and I'm like, so just, you know, I'm wiped out because it was so much, you know, it's still in some ways fun to me.
Yeah. Like, it's invigorating.
Just, yeah.
Well, cause
just
you feel
let
energy.
It all out, yeah, you know? Yeah. And, like as a person, you know, it's, people don't believe me, but I am kind of shy as a person. If I get into a social situation where I'm at a party and I don't know anyone, I'll kind of either step over in the corner or I'll like slam some alcohol and start, you know, dancing or doing something crazy, you know? But, I kind of am like that in real life. And then, like, the stage is my place to just kind of, like, let it go, you know?
Right. You know, I find the same, like, when people start playing karaoke. For me, I'm like, oh, it's like, I get super shy about stuff like that.
That's funny, too. I hate karaoke.
Yeah.
I get so nervous like that. I can get up and sing and do whatever. But if it's karaoke, those words are coming so fast.
Yeah.
I'm like, and it's always
not like
different.
Timed.
I hate that.
It's like the worst. I'm like, and you know, you take it seriously.
Yeah.
So it's like when you're doing that, you're like, there's no way this can be respectable on any level. I'm just going to never like it.
And it's never in the right key that you sing it. And then you try to sing it. And then you're like, wait, this is too low. Or too high, and then people are like, I thought she was a singer.
Yeah, exactly. It's like the worst
thing. So I hardly do it. The last time I did it, it was like, I think it was years ago at a high school reunion, and we would all had drinks, and everybody's like, get up there and sing, you know, you sing. And I'm like, oh my gosh. And I was just drunk enough to get up there and try to sing Beautiful by Christina Aguilera.
Right. And then you're like, next time I'm going to
Don't ever try to sing Christina Aguilera when you're drunk and it's on karaoke.
Let me ask you this. Coming from Texas and when you first came to California, what was one of the biggest transitions or obstacles that you faced?
Finding my people and not feeling so alone. Like, I remember the first year was just really, really hard, lonely, sad. I was super depressed. Also, just like making this city be more about just a career.
Right.
And like seeing the beauty in it.
Yes.
You know, you've got to like, you know, go for a hike. You've got to see that beauty. Yep. You've got to go drive down to the beach. You know, it's out of the way and it's inconvenient.
Sometimes you got to leave.
You got to leave. You know, whatever.
Go to the desert. Go do something different.
Whatever. You know? But just like kind of like try to take in the city and love the place where you live, because it's not a short thing. I mean, you know, there are very few people that are overnight successes.
Right.
You know, they usually have like, you know, a famous last name if that happens,
right.
You know?
Yep.
So, and your mommy and daddy got them in or whatever. Great, you know, but most of us don't have that. Like people say, oh, it's kind of, I never noticed that. No, it's been 20 or 30 years of just pounding the pavement, getting the smaller jobs little by little. And
most people don't know, especially for acting, like how grueling of a process it is. First, you're sending out pictures just to get an agent. You're networking, you're going to parties, you're going to shows, you're trying to call agents. I don't know if you did any of that.
It's all changed now.
Right.
I mean, you don't even do that anymore. You have to pay to play these days. You've got to go
That's
to
crazy.
These agent workshops where you pay an arm and a leg to get in front of them for somebody to see you, or you have to have a reference. You have
That's
to have a friend that will try to get you
they're
in.
So
exactly.
Lazy.
Well, you know that they're being inundated with these pictures now digitally. People can email them stuff. So the chances that they're going to even see your headshot is like one in a million. So you have to pay to get in front of them or know somebody, have a friend that's at their agency that's willing to take your stuff in. So that's all different. Also with casting directors, like now it's like the digital age is here. A million people for one part, and people can put themselves on tape.
Or they're looking at Instagram as like a way
to
audition.
Look, now that's a whole other aspect of it.
How
like
many
I hate Twitter,
this is stupid.
And it's like the serious. It's even more so with commercials, because if somebody's up for a part and you're up for a part, but they see that this person has a million followers or whatever, and you like never tweet, they're gonna go for that person because they're gonna like
so
it's already built
dumb.
In audience.
It's so
exactly,
dumb.
You know it's. And I hate all that part. Like, I like Facebook just because I can kind of stay connected with family members that I never see.
Right.
When I'm not fighting with politics.
In the people's worlds, and then just shut the curtains.
I'm, like, I'm starting not to want to see their worlds, I know how they really think. But, like, all this, I wish I could take it away, you know, and just, like, ugh, never want to do it. But it's, like, it's kind of part of the job now. And, you know, Steph, love Steph. Yeah. She's my commercial agent. You know, she's like, you really need to start tweeting. You really need to start doing this. I'm like, no, I hate it.
You know, I've known Steph since I was 5.
Oh, my gosh.
She was the first person in my first grade class that I was sitting next to. And I've known her ever since.
Oh, my gosh,
that's
amazing.
She's awesome.
Yeah, I love Steph. Awesome. She's great.
So let me ask you this, too. So now you come to California. Mm-hmm. You're adjusting to this whole crazy scene.
Yeah.
You're auditioning. What was the first big role or first big opportunity?
Bernie Mac.
Wow.
Yep. It was my first audition.
Wow.
It my very first audition, and I booked it. Yeah.
That's high five. Awesome. And you're like, this city, I got
this.
This
is going to be so easy, you know? And then, boom, I didn't book anything else again for a while after that. I think it was like a year or something before I booked something again. But maybe not. Maybe I booked that and then Strong Medicine right after that. And then it was a while, but at first I thought, oh, this is going to be easy, man. This shit's, you know, gravy right here. But yeah, then I was up for a rude awakening, but Gary got me, he had a friend that, you know, was an agent and he told him about me. And so I got an agent within like the first 4 months I was here because
that's
again,
amazing.
That was Gary.
Yeah, that's still amazing.
And it was Halpern and Associates. And, so they got me in for Bernie Mac and I booked it and. Yeah, and then they became managers, and I stayed with them for a little bit, but then I was like, I don't really need a manager, and then I just kind of bounced around to, like, every place.
You know what's
world.
Crazy? It's like there's so many, like, agents in this bottom tier. It's like it's either superstar or everything else in this giant shark tank that where nobody's, like, going to pay attention until you create an opportunity. They're like, oh, yeah, I'll take that meeting. Let's do that. You know, it's like.
There's very
whack.
Few mid-sized boutiques, or, right. you know, and it's like you actually – I wouldn't even want to be in a big agency right now because I'd be lost because nobody would know me. You know what I mean?
Totally.
But if I were to book a series regular on a show, you know, and be on a show doing a series regular and the show kind of got some steam and people knew the show – then I would want to go to a big agency and stuff. But, like, at this point, you would just get lost in the shuffle, and then they'd end up dropping you because they're like, you don't work. And you're like, well, you don't send me out, you know? And so, and it's kind of like when people get their SAG card, it's like, you can't be in anything SAG until you get your SAG card, and you can't get your SAG card until you have a line in a SAG.
It's like a catch 22.
You know? So everything is kind of like that. You can't really get these big deals until you have the big agent, but you can't get the big agent until you get a big deal.
Let me ask you this, and I take it you've done some voiceover. I can hear it in your voice.
Yeah.
So did you start doing voiceover as a way just to keep acting in a different capacity? Because it's a different game.
It is, and it's very much of, it's even, I would think, even a harder game, you know, because it's such a tight-knit community. I mean, I have been trying to break into a loop group, you know, that would be some good money. But I always wanted to do voices because I sing as well, so I always want to do, like, Disney movies and stuff like that. And so just here and there along the way, people have asked me to do things, and I've done some podcasts, and then people contact me. And then my husband and I started doing a YouTube channel called Squirrel Monkey Calm. And it's like a retro, like, what if Facebook had been created in the 1990s or Tinder in the 80s or whatever, you know, and it's like dial up, you know, and everything. You have to, like, send in your headshot so that in 2 days they put it up on your profile, you know, kind of thing. And so I started doing the voiceover for him. And we had, you know, a lot of success doing that. He's had millions of hits and just reached the 100,000 subscriber mark, and we got the silver play button and stuff.
I saw that on your bio.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
But since then, it's really weird. That happened a few months ago, but after that, it kind of seems like, I don't know if it was right at the same time where YouTube is switching over to the kids' channel now. But for some reason, they weren't, like, promoting us or putting us, like, in the search engine. We weren't even popping up anymore. Like, actual squirrel monkeys were popping up instead of us. And so we couldn't figure out, like, what is this algorithm now thing that they're doing? And they're not – they used to promote us, like, on their Facebook page, YouTube, and they would tweet some of our stuff and tweet about
us.
It's
all becoming super political.
Yeah,
like,
and
crazy.
So now they're not giving us any kind of, like, help. And so when we used to have hundreds of thousands, if not millions of hits, now we're, like, happy if we're getting 6,000. So it's, like, dropped way down. And so – I hopefully, anybody listening out there, please subscribe to us and let's play something.
So we're going to do Squirrel Monkey first, right?
Yeah, sure. This is just one of them. This is Ceres. If Ceres would have been created in the 80s.
All right, here it goes.
Squirrel monkey.
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 Squirrel monkey comms. What if
we would have had Instagram?
Instagram.
Siri. Back in the 80s.
In diesem 80er-Jahre-Tinder muss man allerdings erst
geistige Videos over het internet.
Pedicles, pixels, lijungi,
dan gondra. I like this man. Peter, I didn't know you used to have a mustache.
Very cool. That was kind of like a trailer. We're going to play you something from their actual show right now. This is Facebook 90s. Here it comes.
Welcome to another episode of Wonders of the World Wide Web, the show where the future is today, and today is the future. In this episode, we are going to talk about the Facebook. The Facebook is a digital online internet computer website scene you can open with your website browser. This is a program that allows you to visit the world online. The Facebook is still under construction, but Wonders of the World Wide Web gives you a sneak preview. In the future, you can add friends you already know to your virtual network, but you can also add friends you don't know yet, although they are not really friends. This is my profile, or in the Facebook terminology, wall. As you can see, I've uploaded my picture. If you don't have a scanner, you can send your picture to the Facebook company. In only 1 month, they put your digital picture online. On your wall, you can share with your digital friends what's going on in your life.
I am tired.
Thanks to this amazing digital technology, now all your friends will know that you are tired. Isn't technology wonderful? As you can see, I don't have friends yet, so I'm going to add one. I type in a name of a friend. Now we see the profile of this friend. I hit the add button. And voila, I've got my first online pal. Hey, what's that? This signal means that a friend wrote on my wall. Not my real wall, but my online website scene wall. My online Facebook friend writes,
"Thank you for being a friend. Travel down the road and back again. Your heart is true. You're a pal and a confidant."
Now I click the like button to let him know I like his post. But, like you can like the messages you like, you can also like the messages that you don't like this message.
Fluffy died.
Oh, and I forget to tell you, you can also lose friends, or friends who were never really your friends. You can even check someone's relationship status.
It's complicated.
Oh, I just saw your Facebook relationship status. Facebook says that it's complicated. Honey, is there something we should talk about?
Divorced.
There are also risks on Facebook. First, be sure that you post a private message not in public by accident.
I want to grab your ass.
And if it happens, just use your creativity.
Or your cow and camel. Smiley face.
Another risk is that you post things you're going to regret. Oh, and be prepared to get poked and tagged by everyone you know. Kinky. Facebook also gives you the opportunity to change the layout of your Facebook page. Our editorial team predicts that the Facebook in the future could be free, but of course you need to pay your phone bills in order to stay online.
Yeah. So tell me how you came up with that concept. I love it. It's like taking it back to MS-DOS.
Old school. Well, my husband, he is a computer geek, and he basically came up with the concept, and he writes most of the videos and does all the graphics and stuff. Every once in a while, I'll throw in a joke here or there when I understand what he's talking about. But I basically, it was just like, hey, will you do the voiceover for it? Sure. So I started doing those, and now we have about 50 videos. That's I thought awesome. I had brought Siri because it's one of my favorite ones. But I had just brought a commercial of it.
Let me see if we can get it. Hold on. Just got to look over here.
Yeah.
Tell me if you see it. Do you see it?
Well, the one that you clicked on, that was a commercial, right? I think we'd have to go on to SquirrelMonkey.com and click on Siri.
I can do that. Hold on a second. Let's do this.
I think it's also shorter than this one. That's why.
SquirrelMonkey.com?
Not dot. Just SquirrelMonkey.com on YouTube.
Oh, wow. Just that?
Squirrel.
Oh, on YouTube. Hold on.
So, yeah, YouTube.
Let's see. Tell me if I find
it. Yeah, that's it.
Which one?
And just type
Tinder?
Siri. Or Tinder's funny, too. I mean, whichever one you want
tell
to
me.
See.
You tell me.
Let's do...
I can click on this.
Yeah. And... I'll let you pick one. Tinder, there's Siri, there's Bitcoin, there's Wikipedia, Skype, Spotify.
You said Siri was your favorite. Which one?
Well, Siri's my husband's favorite. We'll do Siri. He's the one that mentioned it. He was like, I think that's the best one.
Where is it? I don't see it.
Maybe, can we just click in Siri in the... Oh, Siri, Squirrel Monkey. Squirrel Monkey Com, maybe.
Is that
it? Siri in the 80s? Is that?
Oh, there it is. All right, we got it.
Welcome to another episode of Wonders of the World Wide Web. In this episode, we're going to talk about Siri.
I am Siri.
But what is Siri? We all talk to our computer, especially when things go wrong. But with Siri, your computer talks back.
Hello.
Hello.
Siri stands for Speech Interpretation and Recognition Interface. For Siri, you'll need a Mac or a personal computer, a sound card that can record audio, like the Kovox VoiceMaster, a microphone, at least 512 kilobytes of RAM, Siri, and a modem. In this episode, we're not going to demonstrate the Apple Macintosh version of Siri. We're going to show you the MS-DOS version. You can start the software by typing S-I-R-I after the prompt. After pressing the Enter key, the software will ask for the sound card. We've already installed the Kovox VoiceMaster. The software asks if we want to change the sound card. I press the N for No. Now I'll have to install the graphics adapter. I select 3, as we have a VGA adapter installed. Now we have to select our modem. We use the Hey Smart Modem OP2400. Now Siri will start up. On slower computers, it may take a while.
I am Siri.
Now we can ask Siri any question. Let's start with a simple question. You can only do this when Siri is in listening mode. Siri, what is 2 times 2? Siri is analyzing my sound input. This may take a couple of minutes. Now Siri is generating an answer. When I press the space bar, Siri will answer me. But I recommend you turn on auto reply. If you press the F1 button, Siri will automatically answer your questions.
3 times 2 is 4.
Wow! Isn't that amazing? You can also ask Siri to start software that is already installed on your computer. Siri, open Personal Editor. Isn't that wonderful? But wait, there's more. You can ask Siri for information. For this, we're going to need our modem. Siri, what is Michael Jackson's newest album? Now, the answer takes longer because Siri needs to contact the network using a modem. Now our question is being uploaded. Siri will give an answer soon. We are now downloading the answer by Siri. This may take a while.
Michael Jackson's newest album is Red.
Okay. Then I'm not going to buy it. Nothing can beat Thriller anyway. You can also ask Siri to do things. Siri, I want to reserve a restaurant for Matt.
For Matt.
Oh, I think it didn't record the entire sentence.
Do you want to format the C-Hardisk?
Yesterday yes. It worked normally.
Format
no!
Drive
Stop!
C.
Format Stop!
Drive C. Format drive C.
Just kidding, people. It's not possible to erase your files with Siri. But sometimes, Siri doesn't give you the answer you're looking for. Siri, what is a cannibal?
We find the cannibals are a British man formed in Birmingham, England in 1984. Examples of questions.
Siri, where does Alf live?
Alf lives on Melmac, located in the Andromeda Galaxy.
Siri, what is Nirvana's first album?
Nirvana's first album is The Story of Simon Sinopar, 1967.
Siri, what is the coolest German song?
The coolest German song is Agent of Liberty by Mike Green.
Siri, what is the 9th planet from the sun?
The 9th planet from the sun is Pluto.
Isn't that wonderful? Siri, what is your favorite TV show?
My favorite TV show is Wonders of the World Wide Web.
Good answer. See you next episode.
Online.
Sorry, it was kind of long.
Oh, you're good. That was awesome. I loved it. So tell me how you came up with this this premise. You just like wanted to throw back the things that are like normal things.
Yeah,
for
my
us?
Husband's just a huge retro freak. He loves everything retro. Like when you know he's from the Netherlands. We actually met on Facebook.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, and he lived in the Netherlands at the time. He's Dutch, and so so Office Space. You know, he knew me from Office Space, and he'd like. Seen that he Googled on me to see what other things I'd been in, and then I added him because I usually add everybody unless I know you're a loose cannon. And so then we just started talking. I was like, who's this dude from the Netherlands? It's kind of cute, huh? So and then it just went from there, and now we've been together like nearly 11 years.
That's
so
amazing.
Yeah, but he was always retro. Like his whole apartment was like retro-y and the walls and everything, and he just
well, tell him I almost wore my Back to the Future shirt.
Oh my God, he loves Back to the Future. So yeah, he's real big into time travel and retro stuff.
That's
and
awesome.
Computer stuff and all that.
Well,
so.
What I love is the attention to detail because not many people understand how long it took to
yes.
run a computer.
Uh-huh.
Like all these things were so ridiculous,
uh-huh.
and you just nailed it. It was like, oh my God, people! You're giving like a time capsule to.
It's so funny too because you know you're talking to like a 10-year-old or something in the comments when you see them and they're like, no, this isn't true. They weren't around back then, and you're like, kid, this is like you know, a parody, you know,
you're
comedy.
Like, relax. Let's talk about your Office Space audition. What was that like?
That was really fun. I auditioned. I didn't hear back for several months. I thought it was, you know.
Did you audition for Mike Judge?
I auditioned for Joanna Bolden.
Okay.
Okay, so Mike wasn't there for the original audition, for the first audition. And I went to Austin. This is when I lived in Dallas, and it was out of Austin, and I drove to Austin. And then 3 months later, I was at the Big Stinking Comedy Festival in Austin.
Amazing.
And that's where I met Gary Austin, at the Big Stinking Comedy Festival in Austin. I met Gary Austin there. And it was my birthday, and the day before my birthday, I got a call, and they were like, they want you back to see you for the callback. I was like, oh my God, I completely forgot about that. I thought it was done. Nothing, you know.
Right.
Again, this was the very first thing I auditioned for, too, in Texas, right when I got out of school. Yeah.
That is crazy.
I was always like the first auditions of, like, in different parts of my life always went well. I just need to start moving every place. So
all
50 states. So every first audition, I'll book something. That was the very first thing I auditioned for. And then I had the callback, and then Mike Judge was at the callback. And then we had a performance that night, and it was just a really fun night. And the next morning I called my agent, because I left feeling really good. You know, you just have those auditions where you're like, I think I got it. They were like, great, can you do this? He gave me, you know, some direction and stuff like that. And you know, I don't really remember everything, because this was 20-something years,
right,
you know?
Right.
It's like 21 years ago. But so then I called my agent. I was like, oh my gosh, when do you think we'll hear? Because I really think I just, oh honey, she said, we're not going to hear for a while, I'm sure. I was like, okay. She said, just go have fun, enjoy yourself, try not to think about it. I was like, all right. Next day is my birthday, and it's like 8 o'clock in the morning, and my phone rings, and it's my agent. She said, well, you got it, you booked it.
I was like,
oh my god, it was so awesome. It was really fun. And then we ran into like Dave Harmon at the Big Stinking Comedy Festival. He was there at some bar, and so I got to meet him, and we hung out for like a little bit, not very long, just talking. Yeah. We're both going to be in the same film, kind of thing. And then
who was attached to it.
No, I didn't know anything. I didn't know about Jennifer Aniston.
First movie, right?
Didn't know. That was my first movie. Didn't know Jennifer Aniston was attached or any of that stuff. Then I found out she was, and I was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to get to meet Jennifer Aniston. Of course, I didn't. She left like the day before I got there. This is when her and Brad Pitt were together.
Wow.
And I remember hearing about when I got there that she had lost her dog or something in the park, and everybody was looking for the dog. And I was so mad, because I wanted to meet her and Brad Pitt, but didn't get to meet them. But it was fun. And it was a great experience. You know, a lot of me is cut out of the film. There was a lot more scenes of me and stuff, and that's cut out. And I didn't know that until I went to the premiere. And, of course, at that time, it was my first movie. I didn't know. And I, like, took it so personally. I was like, oh, my gosh, what did I do?
I had a friend that did a whole bunch of scenes. And then she went to the premiere. They invited her to the premiere, and all of her scenes were
cut. No, no.
So just be thankful.
Yeah.
You made it into the movie.
Yeah.
Most people don't realize that stuff happens all the time.
I did this movie called Grilled with Ray Romano and Kevin James, and I'm cut out of the movie, but I'm in like the deleted scenes of the DVD.
Right.
I'm on those.
Right.
So, but I know how that feels, to be kind of completely cut out.
But you know what the cool thing is? Not many people get to be a part of a cult classic. That's like the goal, you know?
That's one of the best movies ever made.
One of the best comedies.
You.
And you slayed that
role.
Oh,
thank you.
If you don't mind, I want to play a little clip, because you slayed that role, and I want to just show you off a little bit, if that's okay.
Yeah.
All right, let's see where we're at. I think I got you right here.
Yeah,
right.
That's it.
This is you and Lumberg.
Uh-huh.
Here, Peg, you want to get everybody started there? Oh, that is terrific. Just terrific. Thanks, everybody. Really, I really, really appreciate it. It's very special.
Now, Milton, don't be greedy. Let's pass it along and make sure everyone gets a piece.
Okay, but last time I didn't receive a piece. and I was told that
just
I
just pass.
If, okay. If, but this if there, there I can see the cake. There's lots of cake, but there are many people. The ratio of people to cake is too many.
Slidell, this is my associate Bob.
Just pass.
Just pass.
Just pass. Just pass. You know, that's like a very famous line from that movie.
Oh, thank you.
Because you make that. I mean, it's like Small and Mighty how you deliver that scene.
Oh, thank you.
But that scene is huge because everybody knows what it's like to just be in that situation where
yeah.
How did you not laugh when Milton's doing his thing? And
oh, that was hard. That was definitely hard. But I think I was so scared because it was my first movie, so I couldn't mess up. You know, it was
right.
I have to act like I'm professional. What's funny is a lot of people get me mixed up for the girl that's the Case of the Mondays, Jennifer Emerson.
Yep.
They're always like, you're the Case of the Mondays,
no,
girl.
Just
no,
pass.
No, not. I'm corporate accounts payable. Nina speaking. And just pass, girl. That was truly a great experience. And I just went back for the 20th anniversary, I guess maybe 6-7 months ago. And so when I had gone back for the 10th and then the 20th, and it was a lot of fun. And they were getting, I didn't stay for the next day, but they were getting inducted to the Texas Hall of Fame.
That's amazing.
Film Institute. Yeah. So that was really fun. But I wasn't invited to that part, but that's okay.
Next time.
It's okay.
Just pass.
Yeah, just pass.
Let me ask you this too. When you were doing that scene, nobody kind of knew that movie was going to be what it was.
Mm-hmm.
It went to theater and it didn't do well.
Yeah.
But then it's just slowly started building, did this slow burn thing,
mm-hmm.
and it's become this very popular movie. So when you were seeing that happen, that must have been exciting. When you saw like the first reaction for the theaters, I'm sure you were like, maybe it's just over people's heads.
I didn't get it either.
Right.
Because I had never worked in an office.
Right.
You know, so I was like, I remember reading it and kind of being like, oh, I guess it's kind of funny.
Right. And now you're like, okay.
Yeah, and now I watch it and I crack up. You know, I've worked at a tampon factory, but I've worked everywhere in the world now. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is so real. This is so real.
Recently you did a Folgers commercial.
I did a Folgers.
And you know what? I got to tell you. So you're in a car with like 5 or 6 people.
Uh-huh.
And every time I watch it, I cannot take my eyes off your face because
you
have such a funny, awesome expression.
Oh, thank you.
You're just like, you look so perturbed, and you know, it's funny. It's like, you know, you watch a TV show or a play, and I love when you see somebody acting and it's like the people around the person you should be focusing on are doing such like captivating things that your eyes just tend to wander. And you're totally that character in the Folgers commercial.
You.
You're like, you're making all these really amazing faces.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. And you know what? Office Space, the breakdown actually said we want an office type character like Nina from Office Space or Wendy from The Goldbergs.
I've got to get this role.
Yeah, but I still had to go in. I still had to audition.
Wow.
I had to go to the callback. I had to be on hold.
That's crazy.
I know. I was like, hello, I'm here. Like at the callback, the director was like, I just have to stop and say, he was British or whatever. He's like, I just loved your work in Office Space. What were you on camera for all of like, what, a few seconds? But you really stuck out to me. That's really an amazing feat. And I'm like, thank you. I said, well, you know what? I'm here. You asked for me.
Yeah.
I'm cheap. Hey, well, what do we even have to do? They just kind of laughed and shrugged it off. And I was like, no, I'm being serious.
You're like, no, seriously. I'm in the what
like,
you want.
This is what you broke down.
But
I'm here.
But at least you got it.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. That would have been really embarrassing had I not gotten
it.
So
crazy.
Yeah.
Craziness. Now let's talk about Mad About You.
Yes.
You just got onto Mad About You, the reboot.
Mm-hmm.
That must have been a great experience just to be on that.
Awesome. That was one of the best sets and experiences I've ever had in my life. Helen is a friend, and we've done a lot of improvisation and
amazing.
Stuff together. And so she called me in for the part, so that was really nice of her. And then, you know, I had to audition and stuff, but then I got it. And I have to say, it's like one of the best sets. They're like, environmentally friendly. It's like not a one-use kind of plastic set. Like everything is very environmental. Everybody's super inclusive. My episode was a lot of fun because I knew about eight people there, eight other actors that were like in the episode. So that was amazing. And just Paul Reiser, they're all so nice.
They're fantastic.
Yeah.
Like I grew up as Paul Reiser being a major fabric of my youth with my two dads and all those 80s shows. So like, yeah, you know, he's just it. He's always been it.
Super sweet. Super. The script was great. Betsy Thomas was awesome, the director. It's also like a lot of women, you know.
Yeah.
A lot of women directing, producing. Helen's also a producer on it. Helen's great. And it was just like a real family feel. It was the first show I've ever done in front of a studio audience, although my part wasn't, which I was sad about, but I had a bunch of dogs in my scene. So there's no way they could have done it because these dogs were like trying to have to hit their marks and all this stuff. And I had all these like gags where a dog was on my backpack and I turned around and I bring one out of my pocket and stuff. And I'm Patty from the shelter. So I'm, you know, bringing all these dogs in for her. And so, they couldn't do that. We had to pre-shoot my scene. But it was fun getting to go and watch. And they introduced us. And they were really kind. And then we all came out and took a bow. And it was just a lot of fun that week. It was so much fun.
That's awesome.
Yeah. It was like you never had to get there very early except for shoot day. And even then it was like 8 o'clock, you know, that you had to be on set. So you had to be there like by 7. But like every day it was like 10, 11, moseying in. I'm home by like 4. Wow. You know, it was just
like this is a life. So awesome. This is the way I want to be.
Yes. Yeah. Come on, universe. Let's manifest this. And it was at the Red Studios, which are really small studios. And so it's like that's the only thing that was there. So you can't get lost and you just walk right on and you're on the set. You know, it was awesome. There was one other thing, but I think it was on the other side. So once you just walk into the back, you're just right there on the mat.
It's nice to work in that environment where it's like everything's dialed in.
Yeah.
Talent's dialed in. Everything's just like, oh, this is the way it should be. This is how it works.
Yeah.
This is what every actor dreams of. You're going to have more of those experiences.
Oh, well, thank you.
And
thank
you've been doing
a
comedy show, too, recently. Talk to me about that.
Well, I do a play that happens every couple times a month. It's called This Place Sucks. And it's actually like online reviews that he gathered, like the best online reviews with like the comments and stuff. These people are crazy, okay? The people that leave Yelp and Amazon and all
the show around it.
And there's six actors and we each play like hundreds of parts. Basically, I think there's like 200 or 300 characters that we play these six actors throughout the show because we're doing all the comments and everything. We hold our iPad the whole time so you don't have to memorize anything.
That's awesome.
Perfect. There's a screen behind you that has things playing like Anthony Bourdain opens it up and he talks about the elite Yelper and how like they're the piece of crap of the world. There's nothing lower than an elite Yelper. and then like throughout it, there are certain stories that actually made it to like media, like, you know, a hard copy and different things. And so it'll show like the hard copy special that they did on that show.
That's amazing.
You know, so anyway, so it's just great. And it's a lot of fun every time the audience has been packed. I've never been in a show where like simultaneously every single person in the audience is laughing and just
That's cracking up.
It's pretty raunchy too. Like the real original title is This Place Sucks Hairy Balls. And that was like the title of a review. But they took that out because they're like, we'll just wait until they get to the show and then we'll hit them over the head with it. So
When is that show?
That show just happened. It was last weekend.
Are you going to do it again?
Friday and Saturday. Yeah, we do it every once a month, but it's always different, unfortunately. But the guy that does it, Rick Shaw, he's amazing. It's his theater. So when he has an opening, he's like, hey, y'all want to do the show? Because it's so easy. Because we don't have to memorize anything. So we just come in with our iPads and do it.
Amazing.
So I'll let you know when that happens.
Please.
But the show that I do, Schplotz, that was happening every once a month. And sometimes it's not every month, but generally once a month. And we've had people like Jason Alexander's done it several times. Like I said, Helen Hunt, Helen Slater, who is original Supergirl, and Billie Jean King.
Legend of Billie Jean.
The Legend of Billie Jean and all kinds of other things that she was in. Ruthless People and a whole bunch of stuff. She's great. And we've just had so many people come out. Jeff Garland, James Corden. just Angela Kinsey, all these people, Tim Bagley, amazing people have done it. And then I did a lot of shows when Gary was alive with a lot of amazing people like Paul Rubens. We did a benefit for Gary because he had cancer. So it was like Paul Rubens and Will Forte and Mindy Sterling and Lynn Stewart and John Paragon and all these crazy people. Yeah, Phil Lamar, you know, and it was just like just the top, the cream of the creep. And I'm constantly like, oh my gosh, I can't believe I'm performing with these people because they're amazing.
Well, Kenna McEnroe, where can people find you if they want to book you for
this? They can find me at my agency, or they can...
Which is
Avalon Artist Group. And my commercial agent is Stephanie Burns, and my theatrical agents are Elmer Blanco and Craig Holzberg. And then you can also find me on Facebook. I have an artist page, Kenna McEnroe, and then my personal page is Kenna McEnroe Lighton, which is my married name. I also am on Twitter and Instagram, but I rarely do any of that. But, you know, I'll get a notification if you send me a
message. We'll have to have you back. You got to keep us posted.
Yes, definitely. Thank you.
On behalf of Ronan and myself, we'll see you next time, everybody. But thank you, Kenna.
Thank you.
You were an awesome guest.
Awesome.
High five of approval. All right. We'll see you guys next week.